Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 39 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about, are we poisoning ourselves, food, and other addictions? But first, of course, we're going to be talking about the debate before we get into our main theme. Joining me, as always, is Blue and Alabama's Michael. Michael, the last two episodes, 38 and 37, you were a little bit sick. I don't even think they could tell. That's how much of a pro you are. You don't even pay or anything, and you just soldier through. I don't even think people could tell. Are you feeling 100% today? Are you better?
I'm feeling 120% after that debate before.
That was all the vitamin D you needed. That was cough syrup, vitamin D, aspirin rolled into one. The win in your sales.
I was doing the Hillary shimmy afterwards.
But first, as I mentioned in the last episode, we're going to start making up sponsors. Episode is about food. I figured we'll just talk about Chipotle. Eat there if you've got nowhere else to go. That's our sponsor for today. Philip Morris, slowly poisoning America's. I think Trump, he's going to need some new sponsors after the debate. Maybe he would need Philip Morris to back him at this point. I mean, who do you think he could get to back him at this point?
I don't know. Not going to get any big businesses because they're all backing Hillary.
Here's like a hipster bread company called Basket of Deplorables. It's like
maybe
a hipster bakery that makes double food cake or something, and maybe they could back him at this point. But so I think the debate Monday night, it's a couple of days later, and I think people pretty much universally agree that Hillary won that debate.
Yeah, I just cannot see how anybody could say that Donald Trump won the debate. Like, as much as I hate the man, if he would have won, I would have admitted it. Four years ago, first presidential debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Obama didn't show up, and Mitt Romney won. It wasn't even close. I don't care to admit when my candidate loses, but that wasn't the case. Like, there is nothing about last night's performance that would indicate that Donald Trump won.
Right.
But I'm looking at all these pop polls that were taken right after. I see a dozen of them that say Trump won. And I just, I don't get it.
I don't know. They must have taken that inside Trump's family or something. I don't know if that's the only way. I don't know if you'd get Ivanka.
Not after Bill.
But I can see it now. Bill's like, all right, time for Operation Condor. And his like ultimate plan is to like sleep with Melania Trump, and that'll unravel Trump somehow or whatever. And then it shows they kick the door in and Bill's in bed with Melania, and Hillary's like, this is genius, Bill. This is part of your plan. Yes, plan. This is, Bill, he was there. And they mentioned that Bill didn't come to a lot of the primary debates against Hillary and Bernie, and I mean, really, who could blame him? But he did show up at last night's debate, and when he was shaking hands with Melania, he looked happy and everything. So, I mean, Bill, I think he's ready to get in the mix, but that's a good comparison. Obama and Romney, 4 years ago in 2012, they had an SNL sketch because it was apparently Obama's anniversary with Michelle, was the night that they had the debate, and it showed him thinking about their anniversary, and he was like, what am I going to get her for her anniversary gift? And then the moderator says, Mitt Romney just took credit for killing Osama bin Laden. Do you want to weigh in here? He goes, nope, I'm good. And Obama, I mean, he did tank the first debate, but then he came back strong the second and third debate. Do you think Trump will rebound? Like, do you think he'll go and hit the books and like study hard and actually learn some shit about how this country works and how government works, like actually figure some things out? Do you think that he'll try to rebound and do really better in the second, third debate, or is he just going to keep plowing forward?
I think he's going to go backwards. I think it's going to be just the reverse. I think that what we saw from Donald Trump at this debate is Donald Trump at his best. I honestly believe that was Donald Trump at his best, and he is not even in Hillary's league. For the next debate, he's going to go back and look at how he's managed to get this far, and he's going to go back to that, and he's going to start getting dirtier. He's going to start getting more outlandish, and he's going to go back to the crazy. If you watch the debate, the first 30 or so minutes, like, you can see Donald trying to keep everything in, trying to make sure his face isn't making any weird facial expressions. Like, you can tell he's trying to be very, I guess, presidential. But by the end, his face is going crazy. He went all Marco Rubio, and he was constantly, like, sipping on water.
I like that one answer where I don't even really know. I think they're asking him about his exact opinions about the Iraq War, and he name-dropped Sean Hannity about 50 times. Like, he just kept saying Sean Hannity. At one point, I was like, he said Sean Hannity 3 times in that sentence. He's just naming people that he likes to be interviewed by or something, because I don't know what he was really getting at. And it seemed like they had different strategies, because Trump, I could just picture, like, Hillary had all these note cards, and she probably had, like, debate prep and note cards and, like, a whole pamphlet of stuff to talk about. And Trump's, his note cards probably just said Mexico equals bad, Reagan equals good, you know, like Reagan good, Mexico bad. But even beyond that, Trump just seemed like that he would weave in conspiracy theories and keep going to Hillary's emails, and he could weave that into each individual answer. And Hillary seemed like she just let him talk. Because to be 100% honest, so people are going to listen to this, and they're going to be like, well, Ray and Michael, you guys are in the bag for Hillary. You said that since the very first episode, practically. I mean, you guys, Hillary couldn't lose your vote if she killed somebody. And if you listen to Republicans, she has killed somebody. But to be perfectly honest, it wasn't even that she was that good. It was just that he was that bad. I actually think some of the debates that she had against Bernie, she was better. Some of the primary debates, I thought she brought it a lot more. So it wasn't even that she did anything that exceptional. It was just her strategy was to let him talk, and he just hung himself.
Yeah.
It was like watching somebody make a noose out of one of those stupid Trump ties. She did have a couple of great comebacks. To understand why Trump did a bad job, you just have to really listen to what he was saying, because first of all, he lied straight up about 10 fucking times. Just straight lied. When Hillary said, well, we have a candidate who doesn't believe in climate crisis, he thinks it's a hoax invented by China to destroy our economy, Trump said, no, definitely said it. Like, he said it in one of the Republican debates. I saw him say it. Mm-hmm. Then he tried to lay birtherism on Hillary's feet. This has been debunked. I mean, this is bullshit. He must be an atheist, because he wouldn't have laid that birtherism on Hillary if he thought there was even a 1% chance God would strike him dead on that fucking thing. Because he was the birther-in-chief for 5 years. And then to act like it was all from Hillary's campaign and all this stuff, and then everything that's bad with government is Hillary's fault somehow. He really could have beaten her in that debate, because she has a tough job, because she's got experience. And so if you're Trump and you're trying to get anybody who's ever had a bad experience with government, you've got an overdue library book and they're hard asses about it, or, you know, you get a ticket from the meter maid, anybody who doesn't like anything about the government, he basically made that all sound like Hillary's fault. Kept trying to do that and rope her into that argument. And in a way, she has a tougher job, because it's harder to run against somebody who has no experience, because you can't really point to anything that they've done bad, but he still fucked it up. In one breath, he's talking about something true, which is that our infrastructure is lousy and our airports are falling apart and we do need better airports. But then in the next breath, he has absolutely no infrastructure spending plan. None. Like, they asked him, how would you fix whatever? Well, I never would have spent all that money in Iraq. Okay, well, it's been spent. What are you going to do to build the bridges, build the roads, rebuild the hospitals? He doesn't have any plans for that. Like, his plan for infrastructure spending is some big tax cut. It's going to magically, I mean, he said something like, well, our airports are falling apart and, you know, it's because of Hillary over here in the Iraq war. And she goes, or maybe it's because you hadn't paid tax in 20 years. That was great. I mean, that was like fixing somebody over there with a rim shot. That makes me smart. I'm a smart businessman, practically bragging about not paying taxes. And the next breath, bitching about our infrastructure and how it's falling apart. I don't think he needs debate prep. I think he needs a civics class. Like, I think he needs to go to school and learn, like, what tax dollars pay for, and some of these things he's unhappy with, like a bad airport. That's some of the tax dollars he doesn't pay. That's what it goes to pay it.
And Hillary mentioned that. And Hillary was like, you not paying your taxes means we don't have money for veterans. We don't have money for health care. We don't have veterans. We don't have money for this and that. And she made it personal. Like, you not paying your taxes, this is what it's causing. And Trump just shrugs it off. And then he makes a comment about the government squandering away money. And Hillary was like, you know, well, if you pay your taxes. And his only response to that was, well, that'd just be squandered away too. Like, not paying taxes. She came at him two or three times about not paying anything in taxes. He never said she was wrong. He never corrected her. He never said he paid taxes. He said that made him a smart man.
Well, he practically bragged about it. Yeah, he practically bragged about paying. Because every answer just about went to, I have a very successful company. There's very little debt. I'm a successful businessman. I can make America work. But it's harder and harder to prove that when it becomes clear that, like, your secret to business success is to not pay taxes and not pay employees. Because she nailed him about, there's all these people that have sued him for not paying for work. People have done work for him, and then he refused to pay them when it came time to pay. All these people that have sued him, she brought that up or whatever. He goes, well, maybe I didn't like the job that they did. And it was like Trump's business secrets. Don't pay your employees and fuck over Uncle Sam by not paying taxes. Probably not things you could really do on a government level. I mean, there's already too much of that in the Republican Party, where the Tea Party thinks you don't have to raise the debt limit. Like, you can just not pay your bills. There's already too much of that in the Republican Party, where they basically don't seem to believe that you have to fund anything that these tax dollars. When they talk talk about lowering the budget and lowering the deficit, and by doing that through spending cuts, a lot of the government money is already promised. So
yeah.
You would essentially be taking money away that's already really been spent if you're just trying to cut the deficit through spending cuts, government salaries and pensions and things like that. I mean, even when you lay off somebody who's still got a government job, like they've been working there 22 years, they'd like to make it to 30. Even when you lay them off at 22, they've got the 20-year pension. So you're still paying those commitments. I mean, you're not really saving any money like you think you are by doing this stuff that he's talking about. But you can tell that he knows he lost that debate because, oh, it was the moderator. What a shitty moderator.
Yeah.
Lester Holt is totally in the bag for Hillary. A week before that, he said Lester Holt was a Democrat when he's a registered Republican. And so apparently even a registered Republican, a moderate Republican, is too much in the bag for Hillary for Trump. I'm sure by the third debate, Sean Hannity will be brought in as an emergency moderator or something, because that's the only way he'll go on stage or something.
Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani suggests that Trump should skip the second and third debates unless they get moderators' likes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, oh, well, he should make it clear that the moderator cannot fact-check him during the debate. If that's not a bold fucking admission that Trump's a liar, I don't know what is. Like, if, like, you're basically making it a condition that you can't correct him. What do these people think a debate is? Like, of course the moderator should correct you if you say something flat wrong. But Giuliani's saying, well, he should skip the second, third one if the moderators don't. I said, they shouldn't agree to nothing. They've agreed to these debates. They've set the terms. Everything's been worked out ahead of time. And if Trump refuses to debate the second, third time, I think his candidacy is over. Because when you get your ass kicked at the first debate and then you refuse to show up to either the second, the best thing that can happen to Hillary is him not coming to the second or third one, because it just shows he's a bitch. I mean, he's a baby. If he don't get what he wants, he's not going to do anything. And it's like, you've never had a presidential candidate even really think about not showing up to the debates. This would be unheard of if this didn't come to the second or third one. Kind of like what Hillary was saying with the tax returns, where she goes, every presidential candidate for the last 40 years has released their tax returns. And the fact that he's not going to do it, I mean, it is a big deal, and Trump just pivoted towards her emails. I think she was right to keep hitting him about the tax returns over and over again, because when she was explaining the hypotheticals of, like, here's why he may not release his returns, I can only speculate, you could have heard a fucking pin drop. I mean, he was so quiet. She was talking about that. You could tell he didn't want to talk about it. Like, it made him really visibly uncomfortable. That was the quietest he was during the whole debate, when she was speculating on the, you know, he's up there sweating. He's like, God damn it, two of those are right out of the four that she's talking about. You could tell it hit a nerve. Because to me, when you complain about the moderator, that's like whining about the umpire when you lose a ball game. Like, people lose a basketball game by 50 points and they whine about the referees, man. I'm like, it wasn't the ref. He lost. It wasn't the referees.
Yeah.
Trump didn't lose by a little bit. He lost by a mile. And so you can't say that it was like, I think all that bitching about the moderators, that's loser talk. I mean, that's for people who have lost and they know it.
Yeah, it is. I've seen all kind of conspiracy theories talking about the moderator. My personal favorite, though, they showed a picture of Hillary Clinton from behind, and it had a little, they all had a lapel mic. That both candidates had a lapel mic on, and the cord kind of running up her back. And somebody took a picture of it, and it was like, this is actually an earpiece. Hillary had somebody feeding her lines that was backstage. So she, in typical Clinton fashion, she cheated to win the debate. And I'm like, are you serious? Did you not notice the giant black lapel mic?
Right.
The other thing I saw big on social media was, well, regardless of how Donald did, at least he had an American flag pin on, and Hillary didn't have one. But she was wearing red, so is she supporting, you know, the communists?
I think we should fuck with people. Like, I think the day after Hillary wins, me and you should go out and get a hammer and a sickle and, like, put it on our toy cameras or whatever. And then, like, I could just see it now, like, the second, like, the day Hillary wins, I'm like, are you ready, Comrade Michael? And then we get in the big tank and we're riding it down Main Street or whatever, and they're like, I knew it. Comrades are living forever. We're marching down the street, like, singing these songs and everything. But, you know, when you said the Between Two Ferns video, where Hillary's talking to Zach Duff, and Zach's like, what do you think Trump's going to wear? And she goes, I think he'll wear one of those red power ties. I can almost bet money that's why Trump wore a blue tie to the debate. Hillary said that about a red tie, and he went out and bought a blue tie. And she probably said that shit in the interview because she knew she wanted to wear a red. So she knew she wanted to wear red, and she didn't want him to wear it. So then she's like, oh, he'll wear blue. I'll wear red. I'll look great. Would you have a guy who's this petty and this childish? She could almost kind of predict what he's going to do in a way. I mean, Trump's always bragging about how unpredictable he is. In a way, he is unpredictable, but in another way, his unpredictability is almost predictable at this point, because you can kind of, his whole strategy is to come out there and be like, yeah, many, many people are saying Hillary kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. Many people, credible sources. I'm not the only one saying it. Everybody's saying it. I'm not the only one. Many, many people are saying that she personally blew up the Hindenburg. I'm not the only one saying it.
Yeah.
You know? He just tried to like rope in all these crazy conspiracy theories into like an argument for why he should be president. What surprised me was how little he changed from the primary debates. At this point, I think, is Trump 5.0, because he's had so many reboots and stuff, but I feel like he's going to come out there, and it's like when they keep remaking movies. They say, oh, this RoboCop's going to be better than the 80s one, or like this King Kong is going to be, and they just keep remaking the same thing, and it's worse and worse every time that they do it. Don't mess with the original, because he comes out there, and it's the exact same thing. He was the primary debates, because the stuff he was saying in the general, I thought he would pivot and kind of have to distance himself from immigration and the wall in Mexico. No, his very first answer, in the first 10 seconds, he shit on Mexico. And the last question, which made me the most nervous, when they said, will you accept the results of this election even if you lose? Hillary was like, well, she's on the back of her mind, she's thinking, I really hope I don't lose to this guy. But then she's like, but yeah, I respect our democracy. Of course, I'll support the results. Unless your whole test Trump that, he had to ask him twice before he actually answered him. Like, he did not, the first time he asked him, he did not say he would support the result. Unless you had to ask him again, and he goes, oh, absolutely, I will, or whatever. But his first answer was about, I mean, it was about immigration, and it had nothing to do with what he asked him. In fact, it was the exact wrong time to bring that up, because when you're saying, are you going to support the results of this election, and then a guy goes off on a bullwinder about they're not deporting people or whatever, that almost sounds like a call to a militia group. If he loses, it's on.
Right.
Now, he said he'll support the results even if he loses, but he said a lot of shit like that and then went back and changed his mind. If he loses, what do you think? I mean, do you think that he will come up with some Obama's Justice Department and his Black Panther thugs, they scared all my voters away, or like they rigged it somehow for Hillary? Do you think he'll come up with some new conspiracy theory, or do you think he'll say, well, you won fair and square?
No, I do not at all think that he would ever well, she won, it's over, I'm going to go back and roll around in my bet of $1 million. That's not Trump.
No, I don't think so either, because it's funny that he said he'll accept the results, because a month ago when he was down in the polls, he was already trying to say that Obama was going to rig it for Hillary. He had already made a few comments about he's afraid the election's going to be rigged, the people don't want him to win. He was already saying that, and this is when he was down like 20 points. Now that he's tied with her in a lot of polls or whatever, I don't believe for a second he's going to, his concession speech, it'll be one for the ages, probably.
I don't know if he'll give one.
It's just so tough, because this is a man who doesn't care how he looks. Like, he doesn't give a shit, like, how, like,
right,
what people think about him and, like, how bad he looks. Well, I mean, I don't want to talk about the debate the whole time, but, like, one last thing is when he had the sniffles, and then they asked him about the sniffles today, and he said, I didn't sniffle. Trump sniffles was trending on Twitter. I mean, the first 10 minutes, it was all I heard was him. All I heard was him doing that, and he said, I didn't do that. The microphone was, first he said the microphone was really bad, and then he said it might have been so good that it picked up him breathing. So it's like it's really, really bad or so good that it picks up him breathing.
Yeah.
It was either the microphone was really good or really bad. I'm like, but maybe it was you sniffling.
I saw something that said that Donald Trump lies like every 3 minutes or something like that. One of the guys that is a fact checker for the Washington Post was on The Daily Show.
They're like, what's the difference between fact checking Trump and fact checking Hillary? And he was like, fact checking Hillary is like fact checking somebody that's playing chess that is really good at chess. And with Donald, it's like somebody playing checkers that doesn't have a clue how to play checkers.
He looks so lost up there. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Bad as that debate was, I can tell you next week we'll see polls where he's in a dead heat with Hillary. You know? I mean, it just feels like no matter how bad this guy is, it just doesn't seem to matter. I still think she will win, and obviously, like, I'm 100% want her to win, but I still think she will win. But I wouldn't totally be surprised if he won in an upset. Like, it wouldn't totally shock me at this point, because people just seem to eat his shit up. I mean, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, it's something.
But when you mentioned a second ago about Trump lies every 3 minutes, that reminds me of, they say men think about sex every 30 seconds or something like that, you know, like every 30 seconds you think about it. Well, like every minute Trump's thinking about a new lie. He's like, oh, I can get Obama behind the Titanic sinking. I can't, that'll be good. You know? So he's thinking up some new BS to sling on everybody, but thinking about sex every 30 seconds or whatever, that's a good segue into our main thing. Cause we're going to talk a little bit about sex addiction, alcoholism, cigarettes, but really food, because when we were talking about our big things trilogy, we had education and climate crisis and media, and I believe those are big things, but kind of if there could be a fourth episode, unofficial part of that trilogy, it would really be about food, because food's such a huge topic, and there's kind of blue state, red state divide about food. People's diets are getting more and more specific. I don't know about this podcast, but on the other series, the 330 is being kind of a food addict. Like, I probably eat the wrong things at the wrong time, and I'll be doing good for like a month. I'll do so good for like a month, and I'll lose like 30 pounds. And then the next month, it'll be like, oh, I'll just have one Cheeto, and then I wake up like 4 days later, and I'm covered in ice cream, and there's pizza boxes around me or something. Like, what the fuck happened? You know, I'm like the guy from the Hangover movie. I don't even know where that time went, really. And, I mean, I'm kind of like Oprah Winfrey. Like, I'll gain 30 pounds and lose 30 pounds, and I just up and down and up and down. When you were getting sick or whatever, I told my wife, I was like, yeah, Michael's sick. And she's like, well, and you're not going to make it to the end of the conversation the way you're going because of my diet and stuff. So they'd be like, well, Michael's sick and I die. But don't worry, folks. I left instructions with my 3-year-old son and wife to continue the conversation or whatever. Like, you know, I could just see my 3-year-old son. He's like, today's topic is about trains. I love trains. I like to play with them and stuff. I'm like Heisenberg from Breaking Bad. Nothing stops this train. Nothing's going to stop this conversation. Even if we both die, I got a note card down with what to talk about for him. So, I mean, it's still going to continue. There will be 50 episodes. I can't guarantee who will finish them, but there will be 50. But
our listeners are like, is he talking about a Trump train, or is it the Hillary train? Or?
My son's been like one of his playmates or something. They're like, wow, these two are so good. They've been at the first 40 episodes or whatever. They're like, this is way better because he's talking about trains, and they think you mean the Trump train. They're like, these metaphors are just on point. I mean, this is just an amazing, amazing allegory that he's come up with or whatever. And he's
been there getting all these sponsors.
Watching Thomas the Train. You know, if you had a 3-year-old with a podcast, you probably would get sponsors, actually. I mean, it probably would be like Pepsi or something. Be like, hey, mention Pepsi every 5 minutes and get the kids to drink it. We're going to kind of bring that up because when you think about food, bad foods, I mean, the marketing for these has become really insidious because it's kind of everywhere. Like, sometimes there'll be a show on there for kids. Like, it might be Thomas the Train, or it might be Daniel Tiger, or whatever it is. It's like some show for kids, and they'll have commercial breaks. And during the commercial break, almost every fucking commercial is for some junk food. Like, on ABC Family, sometimes on the weekends, they'll show Disney movies, and so I'll be like, oh, this is great. We're watching Finding Nemo, and then it'll cut to a commercial for Domino's. And then right after that, Pepsi, and then right after that, Cheetos. So you can't say that they're not targeting kids. They definitely are targeting kids. As a school teacher, I mean, do you notice any nefarious marketing attempts to get our nation's kids as bad as possible?
Kind of like what you were saying. I mean, with some of these commercials, just the pack. I mean, if you just look at packaging on stuff,
right?
You know, bright colors. I mean, animated like animals and things like that. That, you know, just stand out.
It's no coincidence that Reese's cups are orange, and the package, like the cups, are chocolate, but the packaging is orange. And they have like a bright yellow stripe, and the letters are yellow, and the rest of it's orange. And that's clearly marketed towards kids because it lights up a part of their brain. Like, they love bright colors. If I put it in front of two different animated movies, and one of them uses like a darker color palette, like one of them looks like The Godfather, it's got some Baroque style, and then one of them's got a brighter, like yellow and orange heavy, but they just gravitate a lot more towards bright colors. M&Ms, those could easily just all be chocolate. So the fact that they all have like red and yellow and blue, like that's, there's no reason they need to be different colors, but the shells are what attract kids.
Probably the big popular thing right now is Takis. And I don't understand why they're so popular because they're disgusting. But these Takis, I mean, they're in a really like royal blue bag with orange, really just bright and colorful. And it's funny because the kids will try to like hide them in class, and it's like, that is a bright blue bag with orange writing. Like, you can't really hide that. So
Well, I was watching the Michael Moore documentary, Where to Invade Next, that came out last year, and most of the movie is just him going to different European countries and seeing what they do. And he was in a school cafeteria in France, and they were laying out like this fucking, I mean, it was like a 5-star gourmet meal. Past the hors d'oeuvres, you know, I mean, they were eating, and they were all eating at this big table, and they put all this stuff in bowls and let the kids serve themselves at the table. And the kids would be like, oh, pass the mashed potatoes. Could you see that in an American cafeteria? No. Like, they'd be like, oh, pass the salt over here. Hand me the pepper or whatever. I mean, that would devolve into a food fight so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, watching how they did it, though, it makes our school cafeterias look like prisons because kids go and they wait in the line and they just put it on their plate and then they move down the line and they get these plastic trays. I mean, they had, like, glass plates. They had ladles. I mean, they were dipping it out themselves at the table. The kids were, like, passing stuff around. But the food was really what was really different, was what they were eating. And it strikes me that, like, when we take stuff from other cultures, it's never stuff like, oh, we'll have a 5-star meal for our kids at lunchtime in an American school. French school, they take like an hour and a half to eat lunch. They said that that is a class. When we talk about having lunch fifth period, it's not the full fifth period. It's like 20 minutes. You go and you eat lunch and then you get back and you do a whole class. Their fifth period is lunch. Like, they go and they do this whole thing. Yeah. And it's their social time too. But we never take that, like eating slower and then having more courses. Like, our whole things, like those khakis you mentioned, those are, I think, a Mexican junk food. And so the stuff that we take from other cultures, like all Mexican junk food comes here. Egg rolls and like chicken and all this stuff, all that comes here. Khakis come here. Fanta comes here. Fanta is like Coca-Cola on cocaine or something. I mean, it's like bright fruit punch. So all the bad things, really. Like, when we get things from the Mexican diet, it's not like beans that help you digest food, because apparently beans are really good for you to eat that. It helps you stomach intestines and things like that. But we don't take that. We take, oh, give me that fruit punch that's carbonated in the bag with chips. We take that stuff, importing all of the world's junk food and plenty of our own that we export.
The school that I work at now, we have a 45-minute lunch period. And,
like, it's ridiculous how long it is that they're sitting in the lunchroom, but we have, like, the entire grade level in there eating lunch at the same time. And, like, I remember, like, my first day I got there and I got my tray and I'm just, like, shoveling food in my mouth and, like, all my other students are looking at me like, has this guy not eaten? Like, why is he eating so fast?
And I'm
like,
right.
Well, let's go. Like, what time do we leave? And they're like, we leave in 35 minutes. And I'm like, what?
The schools that I would sub at and stuff, it would be maybe 20-25 minutes.
Yeah, 20-25 minutes.
And they wait in line. So it's not really a full, like, you have to wait in line and then you got to bring in the next class. Whatever. I mean, it's like what you're saying. We would sit down and it'd be like at a fucking prison. Like, I'm guarding my plate, you know, like nobody's trying to get over it and I'm like sitting there. The kids are looking like, I mean, the kids look like convicts because they're over there whooping over, like, they're stuffing the whole pizza in their mouth and they're like, get away from me, goddammit. Don't touch those. I want those fries. And they're fighting over it. I mean, yeah, the kids might as well have numbers on their chest or something because they look like little convicts. The way they eat. I mean, you feel like you're eating in a prison, really, because you're eating so fast and you're guarding the food. Kids would come up and be like, can I have this off your plate, Mr. Fletcher? No, get away from me, damn it. You know, so it'd be like, I wouldn't eat lunch in the cafeteria. I would bring something and they would beg me for whatever. Yeah. And I mean, you fall for that the first couple of weeks and then it's like, tell your mom to bring you some fucking lunch, really, once or twice, fine. But like, every day coming to ask you. But the kids, I mean, it's not totally their fault because when you look at what they're getting packed, most schools have snack if they're not old enough yet, if they're K through fifth grade or whatever, they might have snack. And when you look at what the kids bring, it's like a bag of sugar and a bag of salt. Like, if you literally put half of a bag of salt and half a bag of sugar into their lunchbox, people would be like, what the shit is this? You know, like, if you pulled out a bag of sugar and salt, they'd be like, what is this? But that's what they're bringing. They bring a bag of chips and a bag of cookies. That is a bag of sugar and a bag of salt. And they're eating that whether they think about it that way or not. But, I mean, they come in second period and, can we eat our snack now? Can we eat it now? Can we eat it now? Come on, goddammit, I want it now, you know? And they look like drug addicts. And they're just so jonesing to get this snack in them. I mean, they come in the room like they're starving. And they wolf this crap down, and I'm watching them, and they're shoveling this Doritos and Cheetos. A good way to think about food is that, except for actual oranges, food should probably never be orange. Like, so oranges are the only food that should probably be orange, but they're eating this pure shit. And, I mean, I don't say anything because you're not supposed to, but, I mean, I'm looking at it, and I'd say probably half the grade that I would sub at was overweight. So that's something to talk about. So the documentary came out, I think it might have been 2 or 3 years ago, Fed Up. It was about obesity and about America's weight problem, but they kind of zeroed in a little bit on childhood obesity. So I watch all these food documentaries. If you're trying to lose weight, it's really helpful to watch these food documentaries because you'll watch Food Incorporated, and for like a week, you'll be like, I'm not eating this crap. And then 2 weeks later, you'll be back up. So you kind of have to keep watching them or whatever. It was like, you can watch Food Incorporated 1 week and then Fed Up the next and then Killer at Large the next. So, but then it wears off. But so Food Incorporated kind of focused more on the industrialization of food and the process of making food, how bad it is. And then Fed Up kind of focused a little bit more on childhood obesity and companies that market directly to kids. When you come through the register at your grocery store, all the junk foods at a kid's eye level, like you're saying, it's brightly colored packaging. But I mean, all that's there at the register because it's an impulse buy. There's been a lot of times I've been through an entire grocery store and been pretty good. And then you get to the register, chocolate, candies, Skittles, candy bars, gum, I mean, all these different things. And so there's been times I've gotten a perfect, healthy cart of groceries and then got to the register and bought so many things at the register that it was like it neglect. And then because you buy that, you're like, well, since I'm going to buy this anyway, and then you go back through the grocery store and buy all the things you didn't buy the first time because you're like, well, if I'm going to eat this, I might as well go back and eat this anyway. They know what they're doing. They're pretty slick about it.
You know, I've never worked in a grocery store, but in retail, and we started selling candy, and like we had specific instructions on exactly where to place it and exactly what to put where and how it needs to be displayed. And it was always right at the red, and it was always fairly low so that kids could reach it, so that kids could grab it, say, mommy, mommy, mommy,
yeah,
I want this.
And they do. Like, kids, they see it and they go nuts for it. And it's like, speaking from experience, you can't explain to a three-year-old why you can't buy their McDonald's that's on TV. Like McDonald's is being advertised on TV. They've got a new bullshit burger or whatever it is. And, I mean, you can't explain to them why you can't run out and buy that and why they can't have it at all. And it's just so hard to explain why they can't have Coca-Cola. But I want it. I'm like, yeah, I know, but it's bad for you. But I want it. I'm like, yeah, but it's bad for you. I mean, you could do this all day. It just goes in a big circle. So, I mean, the idea of like something that's bad for you, that's being sold beside all the stuff that's good for you, they don't get it. Because it's like, you get, when you have like the oranges and the grapes and all that stuff's being sold 10 feet away from candy bars and Skittles and all that, it's really hard to explain why, if it's like bad for me, why is it in the same store? And if you had a grocery store that put all the junk food in the back room, I felt like it was like the old video stores where you had to go in the back room to get the pornography or whatever. Like, if they did that with junk food, the grocery store would be out of business in 6 months, because so much of what a grocery store sells, the highest profit margins are on bad items, are on junk food items, because they don't cost that much to produce.
Right.
People always say, well, I eat crap because it's cheaper. It's not really cheaper, really, because when you go out and buy like fast food or whatever, so like, I mean, like an entire meal from KFC might be $10, but for only $3 or $4 you could have bought probably a decent meal at a grocery store, probably, if you made it yourself at home or whatever. It's faster and it's got bad ingredients and your brain craves it, because salt and sugar and trans fat, those are like drugs. Those are just like cocaine or methamphetamine. They activate the same part of your brain, so you crave it. But the profit margins are higher on bad items because they don't perish. Anything with high fructose corn syrup, all the sweet items, they have preservatives in them. Their shelf life is a lot longer. You can keep a Twinkie on the shelf for a year and it won't, I mean, you may have to throw it out just because of the arbitrary expiration date, but it's not really expired.
Right.
The profit margins are better since you're basically cooking the shit up in a meth lab. Because of your fruits and your vegetables, time and labor intensive process, you have to like plant the tomatoes, you have to harvest them, you have to water them every day, you have to clean them, all these things. I mean, when you're making Cheetos, you just go into a lab and cook and make them. And you don't even need, you just use different chemicals that you can order in bulk and just make it as a process. It's really taking food away from the process of growing it and harvesting it and making it cheaper that way. We are going to talk about food mostly. I think it's underreported. Like, when we talk a lot about cigarettes and alcohol and drug use and things like that, we could combine America's drug users and our smokers and our alcoholics, and it still wouldn't be as much as people who are overweight in America. But when we see the presidential race and we see different politicians, they're talking about heroin users in Vermont. I remember when the primaries were going on, that was a big thing when they got to the Vermont primary, or the New Hampshire primary, I should say. And in the New Hampshire primary, I mean, they brought that up a lot for the second state, what they were going to do about heroin use and things like that. I haven't heard any candidate in any party this election cycle talk about what to do about obesity and like so many Americans being overweight and how to get bad food usage down. I think they're almost afraid to talk about it.
I don't know if you heard the report, like when Donald Trump was releasing his medical record, he didn't want to admit that he was overweight, and he actually had them
say that he was like an inch or two taller than he was, so his weight would be like on par with his height. So
right.
He had obesity. Like, it's not something that, again, it's not a sexy topic.
That's for sure.
Literally.
Yeah.
It's not a wall.
It's not a giant, beautiful
wall.
Right. And it's not even a sexy addiction, because in one of my 330 episodes, I was talking about when you move to a place like New York and people drink a lot more than they do in Alabama in general. People in New York, they drink a lot. And it's kind of, it's just part of it. I mean, it's not even really thought of as bad or anything. But when you want to say, like, oh, let's go out to a bar and get wasted, you can get 5 or 6 people that want to do that with you. When you say, let's go to a buffet and eat till we're sick, nobody wants to go. Nobody wants to go with you. Food addiction is not really, it's not even really a social addiction. Because when you think about, like, alcohol or drugs, people are usually around other people. They're partying.
Yeah.
Alcohol is sexy. Commercials for alcohol play up the sexy angle. When it comes to, like, food, it's not even social. Like, when you get a whole pie or whatever, you might not even want to share that. You might want to eat the whole fucking thing yourself. Like, with alcohol, you want everybody around you, like, hey, let's go to a bar, let's all get drinks. When you're talking about a pizza, the more people that are there, the more they're eating my fucking pizza. I don't even want them in the room, you know? So, like, you think food addiction and, like, overeating has made me a lot more introverted and, like, a lot more, like, antisocial, because the biggest thing I fight people about is food. It's embarrassing sometimes, because, I mean, my wife or something, she might have, like, 3 cookies, and I'm like, well, you don't really want one, do you? And she's like, yeah, I want one. You can still have 2. And I'm like, yeah, but that 3rd one might be the best one. You don't know. I mean, so it's like, you almost want to, like, push people out of the way to take their food. The older my son gets, I'm like, oh, you can't have any of this ice cream. And he's like, well, why are you eating it? And I'm like, oh, more for me, because you can't have any, you know? So, I mean, I'm almost like, I'm putting him on a diet that I don't want to follow myself.
Right.
It becomes tricky. And I think when it comes to food addiction, people don't talk about it, because politicians don't want to talk about it. Because I remember the one time that a politician wanted to do anything about it was Bloomberg, and it was one of the most unpopular things I've ever seen. I mean, when he did that soda ban, that was outrageously unpopular. Like, nobody liked it. I'm not even sure I liked it, because what he did was basically said it was the size of the soda. You can't have the jumbo sodas. I mean, really, it probably didn't even matter, because in New York, a lot of people don't drink soda that much. Like, it's like they're a lot bigger into coffee. If he'd have tried to pass something about, like, giant cups of coffee, there probably would have been hell to pay. But soda is not really, like, a diet staple for a lot of your people in Manhattan that actually go out and vote. Even just a soda ban on big sodas, because you still could have gotten 2 smaller sodas. Even something that small, every time I went to the movie theater, tell Mayor Bloomberg to mind his own goddamn business. You know, like, they put these commercials in front of the movie, there would be anti-Bloomberg, mind your own business, vote no on the soda ban. It was like uproar about this. And it was such a small thing that it almost made no difference. What do you think people could even do from a legislative perspective to curb bad food? And because this really is a big threat to America. I mean, I said before that obesity is a lot bigger threat than terrorism. It's a much bigger threat because you're talking about the killers in America, diabetes, stroke, and heart attacks. These are all food related. Go to like Congo or something, they would love for their top 3 deaths, like their top 3 illnesses to be like fat people's diseases. You know, like, they would love for this to happen. So, I mean, it is specific to America that we have so many heart attacks. Your heart just quits. It just says, I quit and I give up. So many strokes, so many diabetes, cancers like stomach cancer, colon cancer. They're all food connected. And these are big killers in America. So I think that, and it explodes our healthcare system. The biggest cost to our healthcare system is like so many people. But doctors will tell you somebody who's 30 or more pounds overweight is going to have so many more healthcare costs, especially as they get older. Like, it's just going to be astronomical compared to what they would get if they weren't that overweight. Like, it really adds up.
Right.
And so it really puts a burden on the healthcare system. From a legislative perspective, I mean, is there even anything you can do?
I don't think so. Like, legislatively, I don't think there is. Raise awareness. That was kind of what Michelle Obama tried to do. For your school lunch, you should have a fruit. You shouldn't be eating, like, all these unhealthy things. And kind of like with the soda ban, she has been just absolutely thrown in the trash, like ran through the dumpster because of this. Like, I can't tell you every single day, like, we'll get lunch at school and the other teachers are like, well, this is terrible. It's all Michelle Obama's fault.
Yeah, I mean, her saying that kids should eat a tomato was like, when Bloomberg passed that soda ban, the next day Sarah Palin came out there with that giant-ass Big Gulp and she gave a podium about it. I mean, all the conservatives make like speeches about this stuff. When Cookie Monster, they had something, Cookie Monster was going to temporarily switch from cookies to something healthy. And she came out there, ate a cookie on stage and said, I want my Tootsie Monsters cookies. And I thought, man, this woman needs something to do with her fucking time, man. Like, this is crazy that she don't have better stuff to do than this. When people are like adamant that Cookie Monster has to eat cookies, and like kids, if you had a shovel shit in their mouths, I mean, when they're so adamant about it, why is there so much resistance to this? Because this is one of those things, conservatives, I don't agree with them about hardly anything, but like, I get what they're saying about abortion. I get what they're saying about tax cuts. Like, I don't agree with any of that, but like, I can understand their argument.
Yeah.
What is the problem with like, don't be 300 pounds? Like, why is that getting any fucking pushback? Like, what the hell is their problem about this? You know?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I think it goes back to they just don't want somebody telling them what to do.
Yeah,
I mean,
so too.
You know, it goes back to the whole states' rights versus federal rights, but we don't want a government that tells us what we can and can't eat. And if you tell us we can't eat something, well, then by God, we're going to go eat 50 of them and we're going to be fat.
You remember that song, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places? You heard that song before?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like there should be looking for freedom in all the wrong places, because it's like, what they think of as freedom is like, so I'm going to smoke 5 packs a day if I want to. I'm going to have an assault rifle and fire them wildly in there if I want to. I'm going to have bags of fucking cookies and pizza if I want to. I mean, what they associate with freedom is killing them. It's like killing them. I mean, assault weapons, which I'm for, by the way. People that miss 26, I give a whole thing about why gun control doesn't work, so I'm not even on that page. But, I mean, when I look at what they love, NASCAR races, assault weapons, bad food, these are things that are killing them. They're dying from this shit. Fracking, big oil, you know, like one party seems hell-bent on suicide because when they're talking about, we need more pollution, we need less regulation, we need more pollution, we need to dump more shit in the rivers, I don't want GMOs labeled. What would be so bad if you just labeled genetically modified food? Why would that be the end of the world? Like, I've never seen people who said, I'm against knowing what the fuck I'm eating. Who could even make that argument? I mean, who would even say that? There's rat poop in this fucking hot dog. I don't want to know about it. I mean, the last thing I want to do is know about it. That might stop me from eating it. The argument I heard somebody like, well, if I knew something was a GMO, I might not eat it. And I'm like, well, then maybe you shouldn't eat the shit. If you tell me what's in the food I'm eating, I might be so disgusted I can't eat it. Which they don't seem to. They seem like, I guess it's one of those ignorance is bliss kind of things. Really, the whole theme about this episode is like, are we poisoning ourselves? Because when you look at America, probably heard the phrase white people problems, first world problems. We think about things like over drinking. A lot of countries like Africa and Asia, they don't drink as much as we do. We have like pretty high alcohol rates. We have pretty high drug consumption rates because everything from heroin to crystal meth to painkillers. We have a low smoking rate compared to other countries, which I'm proud of that we don't smoke as much. But, I mean, in a lot of other ways, it seems like we're poisoning ourselves. But, I mean, how do people really curb alcohol, tobacco, drug use, bad food use? I mean, all these things that we seem to be putting in our systems that a lot of other countries are not dealing with our healthcare costs because of that.
Yeah. The one example that you did throw out that we've seen a big decrease in is smoking. I mean, when you look at the number of Americans smoking in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, into today, like you've seen a dramatic decrease. And part of that is on a national level, we have, you know, banned certain types of commercials for cigarette companies, and we stopped them from being able to use like cartoon characters advertising because they didn't want it being catered to children. They've placed like big taxes on it. How are you going to go tax this Little Debbie? You're going to put a 50% excess junk food tax on a Little Debbie?
If you did that, and you did that for every bad food in America, we could pay off the deficit in like 3 years.
Yeah.
If you went around and added like $1 to every Happy Meal and like 50 cents to Papa John's Pizza or something, and then like a nickel to every candy bar, I mean, you could probably pay off the deficit in a few years because...
I'd love to see somebody tell Papa John he's got to add 50 cents more to his pizza.
Yeah, that cheap bastard. I could just picture him, you know, over there freaking out about it. Do you remember when the Papa John's guy, when he was making the case against Obamacare, he was like, oh, well, if I have to give all my employees health insurance, it's going to cost an extra quarter of pizza.
Yeah.
And he thought that was a scandal, and I thought the scandal is that it only costs you a quarter of pizza to give your employees health care, and you won't fucking do it. Like, that's the scandal. Well, we could stop obesity and pay off the entire deficit if we just add 30 cents to every one of your pizzas. 30 cents? this? No fucking way, bro. You know, so he would just have a shit fit. Like, we could basically cut cancer rates in half and pay off the deficit and build a lot of infrastructure. And I mean, no. No, I refuse to do that.
Yeah.
So poisoning ourselves comes in a lot of different ways. When it comes to like drug use, why America has such persistent drug use, and this is everything from painkillers to heroin. Like they said, people are now turning to heroin because they can't afford the OxyContin. The OxyContin that they got a legal prescription for. The drugs from Pfizer and Merck and GlaxoSmithKline, they're now too expensive, so they turn to heroin to pay for the painkillers that they can't afford anymore. What is behind America having such high, like, heroin, cocaine, crystal meth, bath salts? I'm looking at bath salts. I'm like, they don't even fucking sound appealing. A guy's like, man, you eat bath salts and you want to eat somebody's face. And I'm like, why would you pay money to use a drug when you want to eat somebody's face? Like, what is the upshot? I mean, I look at this list of drugs and I'm like, okay, you know, you get where somebody might want ecstasy, party drug. Like, you get somebody might take acid once just for the experience. Cocaine sounds fun. A drug like bath salts where it sounds awful. Like, I mean, half these drugs don't even sound appealing. When somebody's pitching crystal meth or glass or ice, you'll gain 20 years in 6 months. You'll lose all your fucking teeth. You'll get scabs all over your skin. Your hair will fall out. Yeah. You might lose your mind. You might go insane after you after staying up for 17 days. I don't personally smoke weed. I don't personally take painkillers, but I get it. But I mean, like, bath salts, crystal meth, what do you think is driving people to use this?
I think there's so much. I don't think we would be able to fit it all into one podcast. But, partly it is, I think part of it goes to the income inequality. People are working 2 and 3 and 4 jobs making minimum.
Bernie Sanders should have said that. I'm going to stop crystal meth use by combating income inequality. I think what you mean, where I think people, I guess you could trace it back to the late 70s where Jimmy Carter gave that moral malaise speech. You know, where he said America's got a moral malaise. We have a funk, and I don't know what is, I know some of it. Income inequality, cost of living's going up. People feel like they can't afford as much as they used to. People are stressed out. They don't have as many vacation days as a lot of other industrialized countries. They said only Japan takes less vacation than we do. China takes more paid vacation than we do. People are stressed out. They're overworked. They don't feel like they can make ends meet. There's income inequality. I still think Americans are a little too gloomy for their own good. Like, I think they kind of look at things. I mean, I know there's a lot of problems in America, but I still think, I'm glad I was born here. I wouldn't really want to be born anywhere else. If America ever just feels like they can't put up with it anymore, then there's a lot of Somalians that would trade places with you. You know what I'm just saying? You know, there's a lot of other countries that would trade places with you. It's part of the problem. I think some of it's media, to where we never think about people who are worse off than we are. We think about people who get it better than we do. Everybody's like that. You'll see an actor talking about, oh, I didn't get nominated for an Oscar. Like, when Will Smith didn't get nominated for an Oscar, I thought, why are you asking us to feel sorry for you? You're like the most successful black actor of all time. Of all time, 1,000 black guys that are just as good as you that we've never heard of that can't get cast in anything. And it's like, oh, he didn't get nominated for an Oscar for Concussion? That's a scandal, man. But he never thinks about everybody who's worse than him, like all the people who didn't make it and he did. Everybody's like that. You can be Tom Cruise and you're probably thinking about, oh, I wish I'd got that part of Sully that Tom Hanks got. Everybody's thinking about who's got it better than them. And we don't think about everybody who's got it worse. I don't know that many people now who use drugs. I used to know more when I was in high school and college. When I was in Alabama, I knew a lot more people now. People don't understand that the red states have a higher drug usage. They don't believe that.
Yeah.
But it's actually true. Yeah. But it's been proven that states that don't sell medical marijuana, they have a much higher rate of people abusing opioids, heroin, and then especially painkillers. So states that there's been a definite link between states don't sell medical marijuana and you can't get a medical marijuana card and states that abuse painkillers. But I knew a lot of people in Alabama that were either used drugs or were hooked on drugs. And I mean, I know some of it is just that they're bored. I mean, hell, that's something else about red states. People don't have anything to do. Like, I mean, you live in New York, you're like, I'll go to a Broadway show. What's Bubba and Cletus going to do besides sit in a trailer and shoot up heroin on a Saturday night? You know, I mean, anything else to do, really. I mean, it's like time moves slow, and if you live in a small town in Alabama, there's like 3 single men for every woman, you know? I mean, there's not really that many women around. I mean, we talked about before, I mean, the town we're from, every woman between 20 and 50's got kids. If you want a woman who's single, you pretty much got to get them when they're 18 or 80. I mean, there's nobody in between, really, that's single in that time period. I mean, most people that are dating right now, they're married to other people. They're just waiting to get a divorce, and they're like, yeah, you know, like, we'll see what people get married. They have a husband, and then they'll go out and be like, I think I'll start dating again. I'm like, well, you're married. Yeah, but you know what else is out there. I mean, it's been proven that Alabama had the highest infidelity rate in America, one of the highest opioid epidemics in America. Crystal meth, the part we're from, they called it Meth Mountain. I mean, that was like on CNN that they called it Meth Mountain and stuff. So, I mean, there's a connection. We've mentioned several times income inequality, like really state inequality, like states' rights leads to state inequality. And you might have a state like Alabama where on average people live 10 years less than Massachusetts. So you've got, Alabama's got one of the lowest life expectancy rates in America in terms of states. Overeating, because we're the second fattest state in America after Mississippi. We used to say thank God for Mississippi, because everything I have to say is like Alabama's the second worst. You pick all these categories, so you can't say Alabama's worse than anything because Mississippi's there. Alabama's the second fattest state in America, one of the highest opioid problems, one of the highest crystal meth problems, one of the highest infidelity problems, one of the highest teen pregnancy rates. I think it's all loosely connected around that thing of maybe people are just not really happy, and maybe there's like that fundamental missing happiness there, you know, moral malaise or funk.
Yeah.
What do you think about sex addiction? Because I don't know if sex addiction is real.
No, I don't think it is.
I used to call it bullshitter's disease because you think about the things we're put on this planet for: food, water, shelter, sex. So somebody saying I'm a sex addict is like saying I've got a shelter addiction. I'm addicted to having a roof over my head.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do admit that food addiction is real, and I do admit that I have it. And so I have to think, well, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are being like, oh, you're just overweight. You just don't want to stop eating. So I'm sure there's people out there that don't think food addiction is real. So maybe sex addiction, it may be real. Like if you're a guy and a woman told you straight up, like, oh, I'm HIV positive, and you're just like, I don't care, let's have at it. You know, you might be a sex addict. Like if you think, I think it's one of the things with sex addiction where it's like risk versus reward. If a situation seems really, really risky, like it seems like something you shouldn't be doing, and then you do it anyway. I think that's where the addiction comes into play.
I guess so.
They're like, I'm still not convinced. I was watching a documentary about sex addiction, and like when they showed the meetings, it was like 100% men that were there. It was like you saw almost what they had a sex addiction meeting. There's like 20 guys, and they bring one woman in, and she sits down or whatever. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they had a separate meeting for women, because I imagine the sex addiction meeting, not a great place for a woman to be, probably. But like, I could just see like a prostitute being like, I don't even have to do business anymore. I just go to the state status meeting, put my card there, and I've got like all the business I need for weeks, you know. Our addictions, America has an alcohol problem, supposedly sex addiction, although it's funny how that even that may be a first world problem, because they would, you know what they call a sex addict in Europe? A man. Like, that's what they're calling them. But people are always talking about, like, America's got such a high infidelity rate. We actually don't. Like, when you look at Europe, you know what they call an affair in Africa? Tuesday. I mean, in Europe, they call it Wednesday. In Australia, they call it Thursday. In South America, it's Friday. I mean, really, pretty much every other place has more affairs than America does. But I'm not quite as sold on sex addiction, because I don't think the problem in America is that we're having too much sex. I think we're eating too much. Like, I think that's probably, when you eat a lot of junk food, you don't even really have the sex drive that somebody who doesn't eat junk food has. I used to do the fast food critic on Alabama Liberal, and like I would do the impotence rate, where it was like, people may not know this, this might help people get off bad food, but fast food and sodas and anything with a high sodium, the higher the sodium level is, the more decreases your rate of impotency, and like you'll have sexual dysfunction problems and stuff. There have been guys who they had like ED, they had erectile dysfunction, they were taking Viagra, but then they just changed their diet. Like they quit eating a lot of like potato chips, Cheetos, stuff like that, and then it changed it. So I know how guys are. If that doesn't get them off bad food, nothing will. You know, like if you told a guy, well, this thing fits your chance of being impotent, I'm quitting tomorrow, I'm not going to do it anymore. And that goes for smoking too. Smoking, it's all about constricting the blood vessels. Tinier your blood vessels are, like in the penis or whatever, the more they constrict, the less blood flow can get in. Smoking's really bad for that. It can make your arteries corrupted and stuff. What do you think people can do to combat food addiction? And I'm mostly asking you that so I can get an idea for my next 330. I'm fishing for ideas at this point.
I know. Like, I'm sitting here like, my God, the best advice I can give to somebody would be go listen to 330.
That's what I structured this whole episode around. That's what I've been waiting on you to say, the whole episode, and I just had to make up some lame excuse to advertise it. But we don't even really have time to get into chemical usage, because even besides drugs, when we talk about poisoning ourselves, a lot of like just products that we use, some brand of women's makeup, brand of deodorants, have, they said like now deodorant's been linked to Alzheimer's because some deodorant has aluminum in it or some shit like that. I'm like, why is aluminum in fucking deodorant or whatever? But they said you absorb it through your sweat. Certain kinds of soap are apparently not good for you now. I mean, it's just endless. Like whenever I see Erin Brockovich and she's talking about like all the different chemicals, like fucking furniture may have a chemical on it that when you sweat and you get the chemical for furniture, it may be poisonous. I'm just like, really, just fucking kill me. All these pesticides, all these chemicals, even people who go out and buy like fruits and vegetables like they're supposed to do, and you think, oh, I'm eating healthy. It may be a GMO piece of fruit from Walmart that doesn't turn. I've seen bananas at Walmart. They went from green to black, but they never turned yellow. Because they were, they had so many damn chemicals in them to keep them, it's basically to keep them like fresh longer because with fruits your perishable rate drives your profits down to nothing. So if you can keep a banana on the shelves four times as long, your profit margins go up dramatically. But I mean, I've seen bananas that never properly turned yellow. They just went from green to black. Our water supply. Because apparently this whole thing with Flint, Michigan, I got sick of hearing about Flint, Michigan because it was so much about Flint, Michigan, nobody was talking about all the other cities that they need to fix this before it happens. But it wasn't just them that's got this problem. There's tons of cities that have got this problem, and they're not doing the jack shit about it in the other cities. You could do something about it at this point.
And things that something just like Flint has happened in plenty of other places.
Yeah.
It hasn't got the attention.
And it could happen in more cities because this whole thing with like apparently majority of the pipes in America's water systems, they could be affected by this same thing. Like something like a quarter of American pipes have the lead problem or something like that. I mean, you could be dealing with a lot of cities that have this problem. I mean, even people who think they're doing the right thing by buying a water filter or whatever, it can't really filter out if the water itself is poisonous. Like it can't totally filter that out when you're drinking it. I remember when I lived in Minneapolis. I mean, Minneapolis is always bragging about their lakes. They're real proud of, they got 10,000 lakes. They're real proud of that. But you would think that they would have a ton of fresh water sources. There would be no way you could get a dirty glass of water. The apartment building I lived in, a glass of water straight out of the tap was like a glass of milk. I mean, it looked white. It had like this Alka-Seltzer fizzy shit in it. You had to basically, you had to filter your water in the building I lived in. And this was a nice upscale apartment building in Minneapolis where there's supposedly all these lakes around that they could draw fresh water from. I saw it as like if the water in Minneapolis is not safe to drink when it's not filtered, there's probably nowhere in America that's safe to drink that filtered water.
Yeah.
What a downer. Like, I guess to switch from the downer of our slowly poisoning ourselves every day, let's talk about the sexy topic of the vice presidential debate, Tim Kaine and Mike Pence.
That's going to be a barn burner right there. I'm ready for that one.
I mean, we'll end on a high note. The raw sexual charisma of Mike Pence and the razzle dazzle of Tim Kaine. I just can't imagine it. That's going to be, God, how boring. I mean, you go from Clinton Trump. You know, they should have opened with the Pence Kaine debate as like a warm up because it's like, I mean, having Trump Clinton followed by Pence Kaine, that's like having the Rolling Stones followed by the Creed or something, you know. Like, that's just like, you know, we got to follow the Beatles, but here we are now, Smash Mouth with our one hit wonder song out here. I mean, there's just no. We're wrong. Like, what if Tim Kaine and Mike Pence get out there, and by the end of it, there's a fucking fist fight or something? Tim Kaine's like, you bitch, I'm sick of your shit. And Mike Pence's like, come on, bitch. You know, and they're just like do a WWF, like somebody breaks a chair over somebody else's head, and like Mike Pence rolls up his sleeve, and he's got like a Hell's Angels tattoo or something. He's like, I'll show you something I learned in Nam, and like punches Tim Kaine in the face or something. We got that to look forward to. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.com.
Of course, you found me, Alabama Liberal. Join us when we get to the big 4-0.